Well, everybody, welcome back to the Monday Dirt Talk podcast. We've been brainstorming on some of the different things we can offer from an audio format. And as I was brainstorming, I was looking around our office and realized we have all of these amazing stories. We have stacks of books. Every time I find a construction-related book or story, I buy it. And so we've collected some pretty cool stories over the past few years. And I'm sure there's many, many, many more to find. I recently spoke to Ames Construction, their Rocky Mountain division, maybe a month ago in Denver now. And before I did, I wanted to research Ames and the history of Ames. And the absolute best account of the Ames Construction story is a book that we have, coincidentally, called Persistence Creates Opportunity, Building America for 50 Years, The Story of Ames Construction. Let me see who penned this book. Dang it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who penned the book. It doesn't have an author. I believe Ames commissioned. They had to commission this book at some point for their 50th anniversary. And it is so well done. And I dug into the beginnings of Ames, and it's an amazing story. I wrote about it on social media, but I felt it was worth actually reading through the beginning of Ames and seeing what everybody thinks. So this is the very genesis of Ames Construction, now the multi-billion dollar behemoth building all kinds of infrastructure across the United States. They're a really, really big deal. But not that long ago, less than technically a lifetime ago, they began with one man. In high school, Dick Ames was a talented athlete. He excelled in competitive sports like football, basketball, and track. He received the Athletic Award in 1947, the same award that his son, Larry, would later receive in 1967. As a sports enthusiast, Dick aspired to become a football coach. However, at the time, coaches were required to also teach classes. So after graduating from high school in 1948, Dick enrolled at the Mankato State Teachers College in Mankato, Minnesota, to obtain his teaching certificate. And I probably butchered that town. Life had other plans for Dick, and in 1949, he married his high school sweetheart, Norma Lewis. Dick abandoned his coaching dreams, left college, and the couple moved to Farmington, Minnesota, where Dick farmed with his grandfather, George. In 1951, Dick's father encouraged him to secure a stable job off the farm to support his wife and two young sons, Larry and Bruce. At the suggestion of a former schoolmate, Ann Volden, Dick approached her father, Verdi, for a job with his construction company. Verdi liked to hire farm boys, reasoning they were accustomed to hard work and usually had experience with equipment. Dick was immediately hired, moved his family to Lakeville, Minnesota, and in 1952, at the age of 23, began working at the V.J. Volden Highway Construction Company. Dick started as a day laborer, primarily laying culverts, picking rock, and cutting trees. He was also a substitute equipment operator whenever one of the regular operators failed to show up. When the operator returned, Dick went back to doing physical labor. After about a month as a Volden employee, Dick was promoted to the position of equipment operator. As Dick put it, "The guy didn't come back, so I stayed there." Verdi was an intelligent man and a colorful character. He worked hard and played hard. When things were going well, he drank a little scotch, and when things were going bad, he drank a little more. Verdi worked shoulder to shoulder with his employees and never asked any of them to do a job that he wasn't willing to do himself. At that time, increased motor traffic and reliance on the automobile as the primary mode of transportation throughout the country placed the road construction industry in a position of growth, but money was needed to build the roads. Finally, the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956 established the Highway Trust Fund to pay for construction of the interstate highway system. This fund was the key to putting the industry at the forefront of major government initiatives aimed at mobilizing America. This marked the beginning of the golden years of road building. Dick dedicated his life to the company and was determined to learn everything he could about the construction business. He liked the work he was doing, and his dream was to emulate Verdi's success. Success that allowed Verdi to buy a new car, travel the world, and vacation in Mexico with his family every year. Dick worked day and night doing whatever was asked of him, and he was and always wanted to learn more. Eventually, he advanced to a grade foreman and then a project manager, where he worked directly with Verdi. As the years passed, Dick and Verdi became more than just employee and employer. The company's shop was located on a farm on the outskirts of town, and part of Dick's compensation was to live with his family in the house on the property. Over the years, Dick and Verdi had serious conversations about Dick's future, and Verdi told him that when he was ready to quit, he would help Dick get started in his own construction business. In November of 1961, Dick began hearing rumors around town that Verdi was preparing to get out of the business and planned to have an auction sale of his equipment. They continued to work side by side, day in and day out. The rumors continued to circulate, but Verdi never said a word to Dick about his intention to close the business. The day before Thanksgiving, Dick and Verdi were working in different locations, and the more Dick thought about Verdi's silence, the more agitated he became. By mid-afternoon, Dick decided he had waited long enough. He got in his pickup truck and drove to the nearby farm where Verdi was running a dragline to clean out a swamp. "I walked to where Verdi was working and he shut the machine off," said Dick. He confronted Verdi about the rumors. Verdi said, "I've been meaning to talk to you about that. Let's go to the Lakeville liquor store and have a drink." Lakeville Liquor was a favorite spot of Verdi's to discuss important matters over a few drinks. Verdi confirmed that he had plans to get out of the business, and Dick reminded him of the conversations they had about Dick starting his own business. Verdi said, "Ames, you know, it takes a lot of money to buy me out." Dick did not have the money to buy the company, and Verdi knew it. With nothing left to discuss, Dick left the Lakeville liquor store determined to start a business with or without Verdi's help. "I didn't have work lined up, but I knew a lot of people who believed in me." Dick was angry and decided to take action. He went home and immediately called Fritz Ryan, a salesman at the local equipment dealership, William H. Ziegler Company. Fritz made the trip out to the farm, and Dick told him he was ready to purchase some construction equipment. He was going into business for himself. "I signed a purchase agreement and told Fritz I would come to the dealership on Monday to buy what I needed." The two men shook hands and the deal was sealed. After Fritz left the farm, he stopped to see one of his good customers, Matt Fisher of Fisher Construction Company. Fritz told Matt that he had just signed an agreement with Dick for a piece of equipment to start his own construction business. Since Matt had married Verdi's daughter, Anne, a new rumor was soon circulating around town about Dick's purchase, and the news would not take long to reach Verdi. "I hadn't told Norma what I had done, but I knew there would be serious repercussions," recalled Dick. The following day, Thanksgiving Day, Dick told Norma what happened with Verdi and his plan to start a business. The more emotional she became, the less confident Dick was about his new venture. By nightfall, he had told Norma that he would call Fritz the next day and cancel the deal. It was a hard decision for Dick to make. Your word is your bond. When you enter into an agreement with somebody, you don't just walk away from that commitment. Around 6:30 a.m. the day after he had told Norma about his plan, a vehicle pulled up to the front of the house while Dick was having breakfast with his family. Verdi got out of the car and burst through the front door. "Ames, you will be out of my house today." With that, Verdi stormed out and headed out to the shop. Dick was close behind him as the argument escalated, getting more heated with each minute. When Dick returned to the house, he called Kenny Nelson, a developer and home builder he had done some work for, and told him he and his family needed a house to rent. Kenny had a farmhouse available just south of Farmington, and by the end of the same day, Dick and his family had packed up their belongings and were off Verdi's property. After the confrontation with Verdi, there was no turning back. Dick had to move forward with his plan to start his business, and Norma, although apprehensive, would support him however she could. As planned, Dick drove to the dealership on Monday to talk with the used equipment manager, George Myers. The work Dick wanted to do would dictate the type of equipment he needed to buy. I decided to do as much soil conservation work as possible, said Dick. Ziegler had recently taken in some older equipment from a construction company in Faribault, Minnesota, and George told him, Dick, that D813A is just what you need. I have known that tractor since it was originally purchased from Ziegler. We have all the history. He told Dick that the main components, the engine, transmission, and final drives, were good. It's a good machine, but the undercarriage and tracks were completely gone. Dick knew he could do the repair work himself, so he finalized the purchase for his first piece of equipment, a 1953 Caterpillar model D813A bulldozer. The dozer cost $6,000, a substantial sum at the time, equivalent to an average family income for an entire year. Since Dick and Norma did not have the money to purchase the equipment, Dick went to the First State Bank of Castle Rock to ask for a loan. Dick, his dad, and his granddad all banked there. The bank agreed to extend Dick a loan if he could secure a cosigner. Howard Walco owned a big dairy farm in the area and was good friends with my parents, recalled Dick. Howard knew what I was trying to do and was willing to co-sign the bank loan. Buying the D8 started him on the path to building his dream, but Dick's confidence was still shaky. His sister, Audrey Ames Brennan, remembered Dick doubting his decision. My husband, Bud, and I had a family gathering at our place and Dick came. He told us he bought his first Caterpillar and that he was going into business for himself, but he didn't know if he was doing the right thing. A capable mechanic and welder, Dick spent the cold, snowy Minnesota winter doing the repair and maintenance work on the well-worn dozer to ensure it would be a reliable piece of equipment for his new business. Living off a small weekly unemployment check, he rented a bay to work on the dozer at the Hart Noise Shop in the neighboring town of Prior Lake. His good friend, Ted Lattimore, who also worked for Verdi but was laid off for the winter, helped Dick ready the dozer for use. Dick worked day after day with the burning rod, welding on the bottom rollers, track links, top rollers, and sprockets. The exhaust fans in the shop were very poor, and the smoke would get so thick we couldn't see anything but the burning rod building up those rollers, recalled Dick. The work went on for weeks. I was a cigarette smoker at the time, too. I'm surprised I have lungs left. In the spring of 1962, the D8 was ready to be put to work, and Dick's company, Richard J. Ames Excavating, was in business. Arnold Cruz, the owner of First State Bank of Castle Rock, gave Dick a job loading some spoil banks alongside a drainage ditch. Then I started to pick up jobs here or there, recalled Dick. I bought a used truck and a lowboy trailer to move from job to job. He also found a used Laterno scraper to pull behind the D8 tractor. Things were starting to come together. Relationships Dick had developed with local officials while working for Verdi also helped him secure his first road job for the Castle Rock Township near the former Nike missile base. I had the contract for grading 2 miles of township road. One day while working the Castle Rock Township job, Dick noticed a familiar pickup truck heading in his direction. Verdi was running a job that connected to Dick's at the south end of the road. Dick got off his machine and Verdi got out of the truck. Verdi told Dick that it was his final job and asked Dick if he wanted to buy the rest of his equipment. The bond that Dick and Verdi had forged over the years would not be severed over Dick's decision to break out on his own. The two men reconciled, shook hands, and continued a friendship that was destined to last a lifetime. After 10 years as Dick's employer and teacher, Verdi Volden stepped into a new role as Dick's mentor. The days were long, and a one-man business demanded that nights be even longer. Dick would move dirt during the day and repair the equipment as needed at night to keep it in its best running condition. Although he ran the business alone, Dick did not always work alone. Larry, Dick's 13-year-old son, idolized his dad and shadowed him every chance he had after school and on the weekends, lending a welcomed extra set of hands for the physically demanding work. Dick refers to Larry as his first employee. I did whatever dad asked me to do, recalled Larry. Sometimes I'd pick rocks or drive the pickup, and sometimes I'd run up to the farmhouse and bring back coffee. It was truly a family affair. Dick's wife, Norma, who was a CPA and worked for the Farmington School District, set up an office and did the bookkeeping. By mid-August 1962, Dick felt ready to grow his fledgling company and asked his brother, Raymond Butch Ames, to join his company as a partner. Butch is 12 years younger than Dick and had also worked a couple of years for Volden Construction. But at the time Dick asked Butch to partner with him, Butch was working for a local highway contractor on a project near the property of George Molecha, a local poultry farmer where Dick was doing soil conservation work. "I met up with Dick at Cedar Avenue near Castle Rock," said Butch. "He asked me to work with him, and we became partners on the spot." Together, Dick and Butch worked small projects, including county highways, township roads, and small state jobs. The soil conservation effort gave a big boost to the small company. During the late 1950s and early 1960s, the government was very concerned about soil erosion from croplands. Because the farmers had little money to put into conservation, the federal government agreed to pay for 80% of the soil conservation work on the farms, leaving the farmer to pay the remaining 20%. Funded by the United States Department of Agriculture's Soil Conservation Service, the goal was to improve drainage and reduce the erosion of fertile topsoil from agricultural land. Work consisted primarily of regrading fields and constructing ditches and waterways to help control runoff and reduce soil erosion from the fields. These projects helped mitigate the environmental impacts of farming and improved water quality in the streams and rivers affected by the runoff. It also helped Dick and Butch establish valuable relationships. Working for farmers was a natural fit for the Ames brothers, and it was instrumental in helping them learn how to work with people. "We were farm kids," said Butch. "Farmers are proud and pretty fussy. We learned to have respect for people and their property. That respect for property was instilled by their father, Chester. Dad made sure we learned to be good stewards of the land." Communication was an important part of working with the farmers. "When we were done at night, we couldn't just pick up, go home, and forget about the job," said Butch. "We had to stop by the farmhouse, explain what we had accomplished that day, and let the farmer know what was going to happen the next day." It was on these farms that the company began to build its solid reputation for taking care of the customer, a reputation that extends throughout the company's history. "The farmers talked to each other," said Butch. "They were the best advertising we had." Communication with the local representatives of the Soil Conservation Service was also critical. Most of the work was performed on an hourly, time and materials basis, so clear communication with the government was essential to getting paid for all of the hours worked. Dick and Butch exemplified a never-give-up attitude and worked day in and day out, dawn to dusk, with an occasional Sunday off, and Larry helped them every chance he had. "We had nothing to lose and everything to gain." Dick and Butch hustled to get business wherever and whenever they could, continuing to do excavation work for township roads, digging basements, and performing soil conservation work for local farmers. For the most part, they worked nearly every day of the week. The company was incorporated July 10th, 1963, and the name was changed from Richard J. Ames Excavating to Ames Construction Incorporated. Norma, who was a CPA and worked for the superintendent of schools in Farmington, handled the paperwork from a makeshift office in their farmhouse south of Lakeville. "When we moved to that house on the farm, there were chickens on the front porch. It was really in desperate condition," recalled Norma. "But we remodeled it, and the room off the kitchen had an outside door, so we made that into the office. I remember typing bids late at night with an old manual typewriter. You couldn't make any mistakes or you'd have to start over." Norma was a frugal woman, counting every penny earned and every penny spent. According to Dick, Norma was very tight with money and made sure she wasn't being cheated, no matter how small the issue. If she bought groceries and there was one bad banana in the bunch, she would take it back. Norma's close watch on finances and her ability to scrutinize the value of a purchase were critical to the early success of Ames Construction. She made sure payroll was handled, but she also became the sole support person for the business end of the company. According to Butch, "We never had to worry about the money part of the company. Norma managed the back end of the whole business, and you knew she would just take care of it." Since Dick performed all of the repair and maintenance on his equipment, having the farmland was an asset. Dick was really a good mechanic and welder, said Butch. He worked on all the equipment himself. However, not having a shop to work in was challenging. When Dick learned that a new Lutheran church was going to be built in Lakeville, he saw an opportunity and immediately set out to strike a deal. For the cost of moving the old structure off the church property, Dick had the church, the same church he and his wife Norma and Butch and his wife Karen were married in, moved to his farm by his friend Chuck Wren. The church was soon converted into the company's first shop. Del Giles was working for us and he had a lot of different skills, said Dick. A big overhead door was installed on the north end and they poured a concrete floor. We mixed and poured the concrete by hand and hauled it with wheelbarrows. It was a lot of work, but worth it. The shop was the talk of the neighborhood. Ames Construction continued acquiring contracts for excavation and grading work for township roads, digging basements, and carrying out soil conservation work for local farmers. In the winters, the company plowed snow for the state highway department and local townships. In addition to helping keep money coming in over winter months, when winter prevented more conventional earthwork from being done, snow plowing became an important part of the business. By building relationships with the townships for snow plowing work, the company was in a good position to acquire road improvement or gravel road maintenance in the summer. As more people with jobs in town moved out into the country, snow plowing on the township roads became more important so they could get to work. For several years, the company's snow plowing assignments included Highway 50, stretching from Farmington to Red Wing. This was one of the toughest roads to keep cleared because it was rather hilly, and the winds would often form new drifts that blocked the road soon after it was plowed. Dan Nicolai, president of Castle Rock Bank, where Dick secured his first equipment loan, remembers that cash flow wasn't quite what Dick hoped it would be during that time, especially in the winter months. Dick and I would get together, and he would say, "Dan, pray for snow. I need some income." And when we'd get snow, he'd say, "Dan, you've got to slow down on the praying. I can't keep up with it." Typically, the farmers could dig themselves out when they needed to, but sometimes they were crafty about getting a little help. For example, Dick got a call one wintry afternoon from a farmer who happened to have a long driveway that stretched from the road to the farmhouse. He asked Dick if he was scheduled to plow the road that evening, and Dick told him yes, he would be coming through that area. He told Dick that the family would be having a birthday party for one of his children, and Dick was welcome to stop in for some cake and a cup of coffee. "And when you're coming down the driveway," said the farmer, "don't forget to drop your plow." In 1963, John Ames was the next brother to join Ames Construction full-time after serving 6 months in the Army Reserves. He soon discovered that plowing snow could be hard on equipment and his ego. One evening, while John was plowing over a bridge, he caught the blade of the galleon motor grader on an expansion joint. The impact tore the blade and circle off the grader, making it impossible for him to continue plowing. Unable to get the equipment back to the shop any other way, John chained up the broken pieces to keep them from dragging and slowly limped the motor grader back to the yard. When Dick came in the next morning, the first thing he saw was the damaged grader with the blade and circle hanging from the chains. As bad as John felt about the previous night's breakdown, Dick made sure that John felt twice as bad for the rest of the day. The snow plowing incident wasn't the only surprise Dick received from John. At the time John joined Ames Construction, the company only had one vehicle, a pickup, and Dick drove it. John owned an old car that was so unreliable he was often late to work. So when Dick had a chance to take another pickup and trade for some work he did in West St. Paul, he gave it to John. Dick told him, "Take this to the Chevy dealer and trade it for a new car, something reliable, so you won't be late for work again." John took the truck to the dealer and a short time later was driving back into the yard behind the wheel of his now reliable company car, a brand new, shiny, black Chevy convertible. Not quite the type of company vehicle Dick had in mind. One of the projects Ames Construction worked on in 1963 was a parking facility that was added to the Farmington Business Development property leased to Frederick's leased to Frederick Willys Co., Inc., a pool table manufacturer. The parking facility was considered an add-on bonus to a project for improving water drainage conditions on the land. Good gravel was on site, and Ames Construction dug a deep excavation along Willow Street for the drainage project. While putting the details of the bid together, Ames Construction planned to dig a hole on the site and mine out the native gravel that could then be used for the parking lot. The hole that remained after the gravel was removed would then be refilled with excess material from other grading operations on the site. This unconventional approach eliminated the need for the company to purchase gravel for the parking lot and resulted in Ames Construction being the low bidder. Ames was awarded the job and the company completed the work without buying gravel for the parking lot. This unique plan was an early example of how Ames Construction used innovative thinking during the bid process to submit aggressively competitive pricing. This outside-the-box approach for bidding and performing work would become a recurring advantage for the company. In 1964, Ames Construction learned of an opportunity to bid on a Burnsville, Minnesota job that involved street work. To qualify for the bid, the company needed to secure a bid bond. Public owners required that bidders submit a bid bond for 5 to 10% of the bid amount with their bid to provide the project owner with assurance that the winning bidder will honor its pricing and sign the contract. The successful bidder is then required to protect the project owner by securing a payment and performance bond equal to 100% of the cost of the job. Bonds are issued by large, financially secure insurance companies. By this time, Dick had hired Reese, Winter, and Associates, an auditing firm in Northfield, Minnesota, to do the company's taxes. Eager to secure a bond, Dick asked Bert Reese to prepare a financial statement for Ames Construction. With financial statement in hand, Dick went to a local insurance brokerage, Cobb, Strecker, Dunphy, and Zimmerman, Inc., that specialized in insurance and bonds for the construction industry. A new agent with the company, Bruce Tellander, told Dick that Ames Construction's financial statement was not strong enough to qualify for a bond. He said, "You don't have any working capital." Dick asked, "How do I get it?" Bruce replied, "With a small business loan." The office of the Small Business Administration, or the SBA, was in the same building as CSD&Z, so Dick went up the flight of stairs to meet with a loan officer. "I was told that to get the SBA loan, I needed to have a bank participate with me." Not to be denied, Dick went to the Castle Rock Bank, where both his dad and grandfather were customers. It took time and hard work to finalize the application for the loan. There was a lot of paperwork, and Norma worked really hard to get it right. Finally, Dan Nicolai, who had recently bought the bank from Arnold Cruz, agreed to participate with an SBA loan for Ames Construction. With the loan money now showing on the books, Dick returned to see Bruce Tellander at CSD&Z. This time, Bruce told him, "We don't really like to deal with people who hold government loans. There's too much red tape." Dick went back to the SBA office upstairs, relayed what Bruce had said, and the representative told him, "That's nonsense. They do it all the time." So Dick, accompanied by the SBA representative, returned to the CSD&Z and spoke with Bruce and Roger D. Zimmerman. Dick was ultimately given the bond he needed. This newfound bonding power set the stage for the company to pursue and acquire other projects that were previously beyond its reach, and a long-standing business relationship and friendship was formed with Bruce Tellander that has lasted a lifetime. "I have written all the insurance and all the surety bonds that Ames Construction has had over its nearly 50 years in business," said Bruce. I believe with that, we're going to stop there. If you enjoyed this story, let us know. Write us at dirttalk.com. If you thought, "Well, that was a waste of time, you should think up other ideas," write us at dirttalk@buildwith.com. We'd love to hear from you. I think the story is fascinating. There's a lot more to the story that I'm happy to get into if you've enjoyed it. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next one. Stay dirty, everybody.